typical murderers. Some plan their crimes meticulously, while others kill on impulse.
It's Jason Voorhees.
Fred Krueger, Mother. Fred Krueger!
It is time, Michael.
When there is no more room in hell.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
The dead.
What's your favorite scary movie?
We'll walk the earth.
I'm eternal, child. I am the eater of them.
No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The boogeyman is real.
Here's Johnny.
The blackest eyes.
Every year.
The devil's eyes.
Don't fall asleep.
It's got a death curse.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Death Curse Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Barker, and joining me tonight are co-anchors, Kent Mullins.
Hey, guys.
And Jesse Gilbert.
Hey, what's up?
Now, before we get things started tonight, some recent, and I mean very recent news, matter of fact, just about within the last couple hours, it was announced that acting icon R. Lee Ermey has passed away at the age of 74 due to complications of pneumonia. And I got to say that that's just very devastating news. I loved R. Lee's work. He was awesome. And just to give our listeners a little bit of a heads up, we will be doing a tribute to R. Lee and his work for our next episode. Most noted in the horror community, generally as Sheriff Hoyt from the Texas Chainsaw remake. So just a heads up on that. We'll be doing a tribute talking about all things R. Lee Ermey, not just Texas Chainsaw related, but we're going to discuss everything that we feel is relevant as a tribute. So just a little heads up there. So for tonight's episode, with this weekend being an actual Friday the 13th, it is the perfect time to talk about my favorite slasher, Jason Voorhees. Now, since this is the first episode of us discussing anything Friday the 13th related, and I, of course, discuss Friday on a regular basis on my other show, the Return to Camp Blood podcast, which you can check out at campbloodpodcast.com, or you can follow on Facebook at Camp Blood Pod, and of course, we're on iTunes. But anyway, with that being said, I decided to let Kent choose what to discuss, and he chose the top three Jasons. So on this episode, we will be discussing our choices for the top three portrayals of Big J. So Kent, since you made the call tonight, you can kick things off with your first choice. Now, in no particular order, just in general, go ahead and kick things off since you made the call.
All right. In no particular order, I'm just going to roll out with my probably most controversial one. Unless I said part nine, which I'm not going to say, but my number one is probably the remake, the 2009 remake, and I have several reasons why. First of all, I don't understand why I don't understand why people were so hard on it, because I feel like they could not have put I don't feel like they could have done a better job of putting a more modern spin on the original. But in terms of Jason himself, I think that Derek Mears' portrayal of Jason was fierce. His movements were fierce. He gave Jason personality without ever being able to see his face. And I know a lot of people take issue with that because so many people are fans of Kane Hodder's Jason, but I loved it, man. He felt human. He got angry. He got frustrated. And you saw all that through body movement. And in terms of the movie itself, it explained, you know, why Jason knows where you're at through these series of bells and little basically crude alarm systems that he has. And the look itself, the remake hockey mask is probably one of, if not my favorite hockey mask in the entire franchise. I love how they took the hockey mask and towards the bottom of it, it's more rounded off. It kind of swoops back a lot more than any previous hockey mask. And I love how he has that kind of staggered, cocked, kind of deformed stance. If you notice, he stands kind of cockeyed, kind of like he's disheveled. And I just think that he made Jason fierce again. Absolutely terrifying. And my favorite scene in that entire movie is probably in the opening sequence right before it cuts to the Friday the 13th logo, like 37 minutes in. Whenever he you know takes a little running leap there and pulls that machete out from the pits of hell right before the screen goes black, that is and always will be one of my favorite moments in the entire Friday the 13th franchise. And it's all because of the ferociousness and the fierceness that Derek Mears played in Jason. He was scary. He moved with purpose and tenacity, and everything was executed skillfully and with precision. And I feel like he brought back the Jason that you don't want to fuck with and you definitely don't want to run into.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. 09 is definitely on my list too, and for a multitude of reasons. And I agree with everything that you said. And other than the 10-foot-long machete, which that's obviously not going to be a factor in my decision, but in that opening sequence or prologue, that you're right, that was badass. And I do love the part 2 Sackhead Jason, the original, but everything into consideration, like you said, the ferocity and just the terrifying presence in general, he even made Sackhead Jason a total fucking badass. And I think it's awesome that they brought that back. And I definitely did love the hockey mask in that too. But Derek, and I have had the chance to spend some time with Derek a number of times over the years. And actually, for any of the convention goers out there, Derek had a vinyl background banner. It actually was a vertical banner, and his name, Derek Mears, obviously on the top in red and showing him just standing there, kind of a zoomed in version of the movie poster. That was Derek's first convention banner, and that traveled around with him for the first 5 years of him going to conventions. It was in every convention that he went to, and you see tons of pictures with fans and him standing next to that banner. And I actually own that banner now. It's a one of one. It's been all over the world, and I actually have that on display in my house. So just a fun little fact. You know, I've had numerous people ask me about that. And of course, I made some posts on social media, and Derek signed it real big in silver on the bottom. But I don't really know if it's something that I would want to part with, because how do you really put a price on that? So
how did you end up with that?
Well, I had seen Derek at several conventions, and as many conventions that I have been to over the years, I would see Derek multiple times. I might see him, say, at Days of the Dead Indianapolis, and then a few months later see him at Days of the Dead Chicago or whatever. And we were at Days of the Dead, I think Indianapolis or I can't remember now, it's been so many years. I've had it for probably let's see. I've had it since 2014. I think, yeah, because I actually took possession of it from him at Days of the Dead Indianapolis 2014. So I've had it for, about 4 years now. And the fall before that, I think when we were in Chicago, towards the end of one of the shows, it was kind of a slower show. And like I said, having seen him numerous times over the years, several times each year, we've just became acquainted. And we were at the bar having some drinks, the hotel lobby bar at one of those shows. And I'm like, hey, I just threw it out there. I'm just like, you know, I collect all things Friday. I collect horror stuff in general, but I have some other convention banners from some other people. And I've always seen this banner in a lot of photos on social media and stuff. And I assumed it was his only one. And sure enough, he's like, yeah, that's the only one that I've had since I started doing conventions after the 09 film. So he's like, literally, when you see it in these pictures, that's one of one. So I just asked him if it was something that he'd be willing to part with. And he's like, yeah, I think it's time for a new one. And since I've had the other one for almost 4 years, the one that you see in pictures now that's very similar, but it has his name in white on the top, that's the only one that he has of that one. So there's going to be another one of one available out there too. But I don't think it's something that I would want to part with, just because it has been around. It's kind of got a story to it. And I mean, I just basically said, is this something that you'd be willing to let go? And he's like, yeah, I own it. So we made a deal.
I'm jealous, man. That would have looked real good hanging in my shop.
Well, the thing is it's actually rolled up inside. It has like a plastic case, and then it extends upwards, and it has like this pole that attaches up to it to keep it upright. And so it's rolled up in there now. So it's not being exposed. I mean, I can set it up whenever I want. I don't leave it set up all the time in the house just because vinyl ages and stuff and sunlight and everything else. I mean, it does have a good shelf life to it, but I figured for the most part, keeping it rolled up for the majority of the time will help preserve it. I've thought about actually taking it out of the roll-up case that it's in and just having it either laminated or doing something with it and then putting it on the wall. But I thought, well, I want to try to preserve it as long as I can. So I've just kind of left it rolled up most of the time, but I don't know how you put a price on something like that. I guess it's only worth what somebody would be willing to pay. So shoot me an offer.
Right now, you want me to shoot you an offer?
Shoot me an offer. We got listeners.
$250 million.
$1 million.
$250.
Oh, hell no. Hell no.
$300.
I wouldn't even, I don't know what number it would take to pique my interest, but 250 or 300, I wouldn't even bat an eye at that. No way. It's not that I would be trying to make money off of it because it's not something that I really want to part with, but if the right dollar amount, any listeners out there, if the right dollar amount came in front of me, I might be willing to part with it. And I do have pictures of Derek and I standing next to it before I took it, where you can see the signature on the bottom. And obviously it's a one of one. So, you know, the authenticity's there, but now 253, it probably cost that just to have one made would be my guess. I don't know. I've never had a vinyl banner like that made, but it wouldn't fucking surprise me if it cost 250 or 300 just to have it made.
Yeah, I had a vinyl banner made for my booths at conventions for Black Hat Studios, and they aren't fucking cheap at all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen that one, and yours is probably similar. The one that you had at Scarefest 2016. What did you pay to have that one done?
Fuck, I don't remember. I think it was in the ballpark of $200. But obviously, it doesn't have, you know, the notoriety that the one that you're packing there has.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some interest out there. I have had several people contact me and be like, hey, what would be a price that would be something we could talk about? And I just simply said, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's not something I really want to part with. I'm obviously not desperate by any means to sell it. It's a great display piece, and I do love 09. So I really don't know. If I was wanting to sell it, I wouldn't even know where to start. I would probably just contact some other people in the collecting community and just say, hey, you know, if you know the rarity of this piece, what do you think would be a starting point? So, but I'll tell you what, if I do decide to part with it, you will be the first person that I contact.
Yeah, man, hit me up, because I have a whole plethora of stuff that I've spent retarded amounts of money on and then never hung up because I don't want it to be exposed. So why do we do this? Why do we do that? I've got a Walking Dead poster that I spent, I don't know how much money on, acquiring probably 65 to 70% of the cast member signatures on, with hopes of being able to display it proudly one day. And now it just stays rolled up in a tube because I don't want it to be exposed to any elements. It just seems totally contradictory to the original intent.
But, oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you're exactly right. I mean, why do we do this? Because we love this shit. I mean, if I showed you some of my collection, 90% of my collection is rolled up or in a file or a tube or a case or something in a closet. When you open that closet, you're like, holy shit, look at all this stuff. Now, even if you walk in my house and you see all the stuff hanging up, it's overwhelming to most people. And I'm like, no, this is nothing. This isn't even the tip of the iceberg here. So I've got, I don't even know how many things I have signed or how much money or whatever. And I do have some rare things like the Derek banner, and I've got one from CJ Graham. I have a convention banner that's 8 foot wide, and it's like, where the fuck do you hang an 8 foot wide banner in your house? Well, I have a perfect spot for it. It's hanging up right behind me in my recording studio. So it takes up the whole entire wall. So it's actually perfect. So I do have kind of some rare stuff with that too, but yeah, definitely. I will let you know if it's ever for sale. You will be the first one to know, Kent.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I got something to throw in the boot. Since you seem to like these big banners, I'm right here in my little recording studio. I have it's about probably 15 foot long and probably about 6 foot wide. It's a vinyl original Sinister banner that was supposed to be on like a bulletin board, like a, you know, the big boards on the roads.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely ridiculously massive. And it takes up one entire wall in my little recording studio here. So I'll throw that in the boot.
Well, I'll definitely keep that in mind. So maybe we'll have something to talk about later. You'll be the first to know. So anyways, moving forward, 2009, Jason, like I said, I totally agree with most of your points there. I just love that film in general. It does have its haters, but Derek's portrayal. And here's another funny thing about that. And Derek having, like I said, a numerous amount of conversations with him over the years. And when I first met him, the first couple times I was around him, and I actually had shown him some pictures in my house, the house I was living in at the time, with some of my collection up. And we're just talking, and he was like, yeah, I being Jason was like a dream come true to me because I'm a fanboy myself. And he said, I love the horror genre in general, and just I love Friday the 13th. So for me to get the job was just like a dream come true. So we're just chatting, and I showed him a couple pictures, and he was like, wow, you know, like he goes, what's funny is if you walk into my house, that's how my house is too. He said, I have tons of collectibles and stuff. Even though I might have been in the film, I'm still a fan. I'm still a collector myself. He's just such a very nice guy. He's very down to earth, and that's not influencing my decision by any means, but he's just a good guy in general. He's very appreciative of the fans. He's a fan himself too, and he's always great with the fans, but that I got to think objectively. But I mean, if you watch the movie, you see exactly what we're talking about. I mean, he made Jason scary again, and obviously Jason isn't talking. So his body movements, like you said, those movements are putting out the message of, yeah, Jason is fucking scary again, and watch out for this guy. And brutal kills, great kills in 09, and everything I thought was executed very well. And Marcus Nispel did a great job directing the script. And I've had an interview with Marcus. He doesn't do very many, but if anybody's interested in that, just go to the Return to Camp Blood show page and pull up that interview with Marcus and I. Great information. But I know it gets the haters, and I can understand why it does. But objectively, if you just look at the portrayal of Jason, I mean, holy shit, that is the most terrifying badass human Jason. You know, 3 and 4 are great, and we're going to get to those later, but 09, holy shit, that's a whole different ball game. So I'm right there with you, and 09 is definitely in my top 3.
There wasn't Jesse, one wasted, I'm sorry, I know I just cut Jesse off, but there wasn't one wasted movement in that entire film. Every single movement he made was with reason, was with purpose. And that's why I think it was so scary.
Absolutely. It was all executed very well. Every scene that you see Jason in, and we get to see him quite a bit in that. And the clothing I thought was appropriate. The only thing that I would bag on it would be the length of the machete. And even talking to Derek, Derek's like, yeah, I don't know why they made the machete that long. And nobody seems to really have like a real good answer for that, because it's more like a fucking sword. Even Derek, I mean, with his height and everything, it still looks pretty ridiculous, but I guess if you want to be critical, that would be the one critical thing of Jason's appearance, because the machete is such a common weapon, as you all know, that I think they should have toned down a little bit. But either way, I mean, it's whatever. That's not going to ruin it for me. But Derek, being a fan of the franchise, he had already done his homework and knew what he wanted to bring to that installment. And everything was executed very well. Everything from the prologue all the way to the outro where he jumps through the dock. I mean, totally badass shit. And even though there's no shortage of Jason, we see him plenty throughout the film. Like you said, everything's done with purpose. And every time we do see him, it is definitely worth it. So, yeah. So Jesse, Kent and I have been rambling on. So let's go over to you. And who would one of your first shots be out there? Like I said, no particular order.
Before I say that, I just want to chime in on the 09. I loved it. From the moment I saw the death scene in the most beautiful pot field I've ever seen, I was already hooked into the movie. The only thing that I was about was that my least favorite character from Supernatural was kind of a hero. Not a big fan of Sam. Look-wise, And I'm sure a lot of my favorite looks are with Kane, to be honest with you. I guess we'll start with 9. I know you didn't see Jason a lot, but even in those reflections and the beginning of the movie, he was just huge, rotting, and badass. There wasn't anything about him that I didn't like. I even thought, like, the actors, where it spun off, you know, and it showed the actual people being possessed by Jason, like, even a lot of them had a lot of great movements. It's like, you know, like, I kind of felt like Kane almost sat them down and was like, okay, here's how Jason needs to move. Here's what he needs to do and how he needs to act. And I kind of feel like that shone, you know, through on a lot of those other actors. But he just overall, when it showed him, looked, I thought, badass in that movie.
Yeah, and like I said, it doesn't necessarily have to be. I mean, we were kind of vague before we started recording, but just in general, when I say portrayal, it can be for whatever reason. But all of them bring their own aspects. With the 2009 film, Derek's, to me, was just very distinct. That obviously leads to one of my choices, but like with Kane in 4 different films, you might like Kane in one film, but you don't like him in another film. But what I will say with Kane is he's very consistent in his portrayal, and we can get into that later. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is with these films. I mean, some of it is the actors, their, I guess, tidbits or their contributions that they think should be in the portrayal of Jason. Some of it's in the director. And I know, obviously, talking before we started recording, and none of us, and I'll just go ahead and throw the spoiler out there, none of us had mentioned the Versus Jason, and for obvious reasons. But some of that's under direction, not necessarily from Ken's portrayal, but just as how he was directed. So, yeah, I mean, I can understand all aspects of the decision. So I figured we were going to be right on point with some of the same choices. That's why I hate to throw numbers on it, like who's number one, who's number two, who's number three, because it's just such a hard decision.
If I recall correctly, reading the Crystal Lake Memories book, Jesse said that it was like Kane had instructed the actors how to portray Jason. If my memory is serving me, I believe I remember reading that is exactly what he did. With all of them, with the exception of the little weasel in the suit. I can't remember the character's name, but he had tried to do the same thing with that guy, and they got into a little spat there on set, and they did not like each other because the guy's response to Kane was, "That's not what my Jason would do." And it seemed like he had a disconnect. He didn't fucking understand that your Jason is Kane's Jason. It's the same guy. But apparently him and Kane had a lot of arguments over that on set. Just a fun little, you know, factoid there.
Well, I mean, Kane would obviously have a huge connection to the character portraying it 4 times. I mean, I get it. But you look at CJ's performance of a zombie Jason, and this would be a topic for a whole another episode, but just to throw it in real quick, is Kane is very well known in his portrayal as the labored breathing, the very heavy breathing that we're not typical of seeing a zombie character do. And look at all the zombie movies out there. Do you see zombies breathing like that? No, we don't. Can they? Yeah. I mean, obviously Kane did it, but look at CJ Graham in Part 6 prior to that, night and day difference. Now, if Kane was in Part 6, would he have done the same thing? Yeah, he probably would, since he did that in all the other films. So would that sway my decision as far as what Part 6 brings to the table? Yeah, it might. So that's just another discussion, is what you think is right or wrong for the portrayal. But then again, and Kane's a great guy, but you might have been Jason more than anybody else, but there were a lot of Jasons before you. You are not the Jason. And I hear a lot of people and talks and posts all over the internet or at conventions, and they're like, Kane is the Jason. Like, he's my Jason, he's the Jason. Well, that's fine if you like his portrayal like that, but I don't necessarily think that he's not the Jason by any means. I mean, fuck, there was many that were prior, and it's just a matter of opinion, so it is what it is.
I don't think I mind the breathing as the zombie, because there's been a lot of other, like, zombie films, obviously, throughout time, where, you know, it's actually shown, like, the zombies, like, draw breath and shit, because I think it's almost a natural thing. Yeah, you're dead, but you have that almost muscle memory where you remember breathing. So it might, you're obviously not breathing because you need to breathe. I don't know. I could be wrong about that.
I mean, it's all speculation. Just when you're looking at part six, then you go to seven and it's like, damn, this dude looks like he just fucking ran a marathon. So I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. It's just a portrayal that you're not used to seeing. Now, granted, when you're dealing with a human version, it's totally different. But even with versus Jason, you don't see that kind of breathing. So not all of zombie versions are similar to Kane's portrayal. And it's probably because, well, it's either because of direction or it's because, like I said, Kane wasn't in there to throw his two cents in. But either way, I mean, it's just a matter of opinion regardless. I mean, all of it is just speculation. What you think, it works for you and for the part. So yeah, I mean, it's all debatable and it's all in good fun.
You know, it's I know it's all completely subjective, and if we're going off just looks alone, the only thing, man, about part nine, and I don't know why, and I don't know what this says about me, but the thing that killed me in terms of just the look for part nine was the shirt being tucked in. And I don't know why that bothered me so much, but it was like, for me, it was what killed it. And in terms of the look itself was just, I just didn't like the shirt being tucked in. I don't know why that bothered me so much, but it was just that was the thorn in my side for that entire look. And it's fine if Jesse likes it. And a lot of people love it. I've seen it cosplayed several times at conventions. But just for me personally, that shirt being tucked in, man, I don't know why. Just that's what kills it for me, that look.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not basing any of my choices off of just looks alone or the hockey mask or anything like that. It's a totality of the circumstances, but I'm going to have to agree with you on that. He kind of looks like a zombie fucking mechanic. I don't know what it's like you took a Dickies work outfit. I mean, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really work compared to everything else, because even look at three and four, and of course, seven's a whole different monster, and six is obviously has a utility belt, but look at three and four. We're just dealing with a work shirt untucked, and then we go from there. So yeah, to see a more proper fit, if you will, it definitely throws it off for me too. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I would guess if there was one thing about Jason, you know, in part nine that I didn't like, would probably be the tucked in shirt.
So you're basing your decision just off the look alone with no other consideration?
I don't know. It's the look. Mostly it's the look, minus the shirt tucked in. But it's just the way overall, like all the iterations of Jason in that movie, they just moved and they just all felt like Jason to me.
Gotcha. Well, like I said, I mean, no right or wrong answer. For whatever reason, whether it be connections to the person that played Jason or just for whatever reason, just thoughts in general on the top three. So I can respect that either way. But like I said, I hate to put numbers on them because it is, with having so many and different things that we see in the film, it's really hard to put an exact number on it. That's why I said no particular order. So moving on to the next one. I, with mention of Zombie Jason, I am going to have to throw out part six. I love Jason Lives. Love that film. It's one of my favorite films of all time. It obviously didn't do as great as some of the other installments, but it was kind of at a critical time with part five pissing a lot of people off. So discounting all that, I just love part six. And 18 kills, plenty of screen time. Jason's all over the place. And we see him in the daytime. We see him at nighttime. We see him all over the place. Kill shots were awesome, directed by Tommy. And his vision was just awesome. I think it was very well written. And I love the horror comedy aspect of it. But CJ's performance was just amazing. And the thing is, as most people would know, CJ wasn't an experienced stuntman or an experienced actor at that time. So to see what he brought to the screen was just awesome. And I mean, I don't think they could have found a better fit for what they were trying to get across. And the movements and the robotic aspects of it that he brought to the zombie version, I mean, right from the opening sequence in the cemetery, you know that he meant business. And that's what it was throughout the whole rest of the film. It was totally fucking business. And I don't know what you guys' thoughts are or what your next choice would have been, but definitely Part 6 is in my top three, no doubt. I love the look. The utility belt, you know, it is what it is. I didn't dislike it by any means, but hey, Jason's an opportunist, so it just gave him more things and to work with, and I had no problem with it. I love the look. I like the hockey mask, and I just thought it was all put together very well.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and kill two birds with one stone here, because Part 6 is also in my top three. And I agree with everything you just said. And, you know, just Jason aside, that Part 6 is one of my favorites in the franchise. Just, it's just so much fun. It's a fun movie, and it was self-aware. And you know, in terms of Jason himself, he was the OG zombie. And I think he laid the foundation for what Kane would later build on. And, you know, I love the darts and the yellow gloves and the utility belt. And CJ just had a very intimidating build. He's probably one of, at the time that they shot, one of, if not the most fit, physically fit guys to portray Jason, with maybe the exception of Derek. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. It was also in my top three. And I loved everything about it. In terms of like just what's hiding underneath the hockey mask, also, I think it's probably my favorite face that Jason has, with the exception of maybe Part 7. But yeah, man, I understand where you're coming from 100%, and I agree. Also in my top three.
Yeah, I mean, some people, they dislike it for the horror comedy aspect and the nods to some of the other films, but I've had numerous talks with, you know, Tom McLaughlin, and I understand what he was trying to accomplish, and I think it's awesome to pay tribute to some of those other films. And the horror comedy side of it, I had no issue with that. I thought it was great, and the cast was all great, and you have memorable characters like, obviously, Caretaker Martin, Bob Larkin, who's actually still alive. I believe he's in his 90s. And with Crystal Lake's, Forest Green's Finest, and the all the sheriff's deputies, you know, Michael Swan and Vinny Guastavero. I mean, it's just a great cast. And with we didn't get a great Part 6 reunion for 2016, which I was kind of disappointed in, but maybe we'll see one down the road where we can get pretty much everybody, since the reunions are becoming big. But I just think everything with 6 is awesome. And some of the other things that you see in there that aren't typical of some of the other films, like, for example, Jason has the opportunity to kill a child and doesn't do it. And there's just a lot of things in there that's not typical of some of the other films, but, even in the soundtrack, I mean, fuck, you know, Alice Cooper, there's a lot of things that to take into consideration with the film in general, but those, just looking objectively, I would still have to say just the portrayal for an inexperienced person like CJ was at the time. Yeah, he was definitely fit. He's a bigger guy. I mean, 6'3", 250 pounds. That's a pretty good size guy. And then you throw him in boots or lifts or whatever. I mean, he's definitely imposing. And I think that the way that he portrayed the zombie character, I totally agree with that. Now, I don't have a problem with the way that Kane did it. It's just kind of some of the things you don't see that are consistent with some other zombie characters, but that's all a matter of opinion, but just great things in general.
One thing that a lot of people point out is the Part 6 Jason moves with, you know, military precision. He does like left faces and right faces, and that's interesting because CJ was fresh out of the army whenever he got hired to do that role. So I almost wonder if that had influence on that movement. But I like it. I think it transferred to film well. And I think it added to the intimidating factor of Jason, that military style of movement and marching. And I don't think it's CJ in the scene where we see the feet going through the woods, but even the actor that did that scene was walking the same way that CJ would, just like a military march almost. And yeah, I wonder if the military had an influence on the way he moved in that costume, and even if maybe CJ was aware that he was doing it.
Oh, definitely. And he had probably been removed from the service at that time, roughly about 8 years. Because if I recall correctly, he told me he was in 74 to 78. So go to the 86 range. I mean, go ahead and do the math. So there was definitely something still ingrained there, but it worked. And I think we can relate that to the Derek Mears portrayal of what you said of moving with purpose. And that's exactly what you see in Six, is moving with purpose, just like we see in 2009.
Whenever he fixates on something in part six, it's like laser vision, man. Whenever he locks on you in that one, you know that there's nothing that's going to stop him from getting to you, which is, you know, what a lot of the Jasons do, but he did it so well. Whenever he you know, gets his targets on you, he's going to go through anything to get to you, and there's nothing that's going to stop him.
Yeah, and people can be critical, I suppose, of that too. I mean, looking at both sides of the fence there with, well, he's a zombie, he shouldn't be robotic, he shouldn't move with purpose like that. But you can criticize both ways, and I just think that it was fitting for the film. I think it all worked, and who's to say really what's right or wrong? I certainly don't have the answer to that. All I know is what my opinion is and what works for me, and his portrayal, as much as we got to see of him, because frankly, in some of the other films, we just don't get to see a lot of quality time with Jason, and we get 18 kills and tons of screen time with him. So I just loved every bit of it, and it's one of my favorite films of all time. So with Kent and I being basically on the same page, so Jesse, where are you at? Where's your second choice?
I'm going to have to say Manhattan, to be honest with you. Not because it was Kane in this particular instance, because in my opinion, his movements were best in 8. Everything about 8. I mean, it's hard to put an exact qualifier. It's just, I felt the, you know, the way he looked, the mask. I know 8 was kind of a little bit more silly and a lot of people are down on 8, but it was probably my favorite in the entire series. Might be because I have a lot of memories surrounding it. But I actually, when I was in medical school, we had to do this project about, you know, movements and how the muscles worked. We had to list, you know, each muscle that was used. So I actually broke 8 down into clips. I talked about what muscles he used when he kicked the boombox, what muscles he used when he climbed the ladder up out of the water. Like, I really went and looked at it from a medical standpoint. He used almost every single muscle in his body throughout the course of that movie. And it's probably the only of all the Friday the 13th movies that I can say that about.
8 was one that I was torn on not putting in my list because I, as well, it's my favorite Kane Hodder portrayal. I love the look of it. I love the wet, slimy. He just looks like he smells like ass. And he's rotting. And of all the Jasons, he looks, I think, the most disgusting. And, yeah, the movement. Yeah, man. Part 8, I had a hard time not putting on my list, too, because it is by far my favorite Kane Hodder performance of Jason. And also, of the four movies that Kane Hodder played Jason in, it's my favorite. Would have been 7, but 7 was fucking raped by the MPAA. But, yeah, I can see where you're coming from. And, you know, I also had a hard time not putting Part 8 on my list as well.
Well, being that you don't see a lot of, obviously we don't see him roaming around the woods with a machete and some of the things that we see in other films, but it was well done as far as the Jason character goes. And yeah, you're right. When you look at him, it's the first thing that comes to mind is like mold and mildew. It's like, Jesus Christ. But yeah, I mean, outside of not seeing the traditional Friday stuff, the character looked great. So, I mean, yeah, I can definitely see that choice. I mean, it makes total sense.
The red fireman's axe that has become notorious with the Part 8 Jason, even though it's not really used that often in the film. It's kind of a throwaway in the film, but it's became iconic with that particular Jason. I think looks so amazing with that look, the way he holds the axe, not at, you know, the normal place that you would hold an axe, but more at the base of it to get a big, hard, straight out of hell swing. the whole look, I think, just looks phenomenal. I just wish the movie could have been better.
Oh, definitely. And I think the game has actually electrified what you just said about as far as holding the axe does, because obviously you guys have seen the game and you look at the part 8 version in that and you see the way that he's walking around carrying the axe, which is exactly like what you just said.
It makes it scarier, man. When somebody's holding a weapon like that, it's going to be a more of a bitch for somebody to swing an axe holding it like that, but it's Jason, so it's not any trouble for him. But whoever's on the receiving end, that's got, you know, 200 times more torque and power behind it when you're swinging it from the base like that. It makes it scarier. It was smart on Kane's behalf, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anybody that's handled anything like that knows the weight and the struggle that would just be for a normal person to be carrying something like that around or swinging it like that, which, granted, movie magic, and obviously you expect him to have more power, so it is what it is there. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's probably a mislooked or overlooked detail for most people as to how he would be carrying that, but makes total sense. I definitely agree with that. And yeah, the look's great, and the hockey mask, you know, it pops. And with all the promotion that they did back at that time for it and all the hype with it, it's a shame that the movie didn't do better. But then again, I mean, we're in the 8th installment later, and they're just cranking these films out left and right. And I don't know. I mean, at that point in time, I mean, look at the big hair and look at the clothing and look at the way the 80s were at that time. I mean, really, a lot of the films, they weren't, it wasn't a good time for that. I mean, the 80s slashers were kind of taking a different turn. The styles were changing and everything was changing, and it is what it is. So yeah, I mean, I think you have to take that into consideration with how well the film did. Is it was a transitional time for everything, not just movies, but just the time period.
You know, part 8 also has one of my favorites, another one of my favorite scenes. And that's the, like Jesse was saying, the kicking the boom box and then turning around and not having time to deal with these punks. So I'll just show them my face. I know Kane didn't want to do that scene because he felt like they were making a punchline of Jason, but I love it, man. That's maybe in my top 3 favorite scenes in the entire franchise, is just him turning around, seeing that they're not worth his time, and just saying, fuck off, man, look at me. And then they run. And I know Kane had an issue with that and he didn't want to do it, but I'm so glad he did, because that's probably one of my favorite moments in the entire franchise.
Absolutely. I mean, that's iconic Friday stuff. And I mean, you see it all the time. You see it in video clips. You see it all over the internet. It's something that's always going to be there. And plus, throw in his appearance on Arsenio Hall, where he just sat there and didn't talk. I mean, that's something that helped promotion for the film itself at the time. So yeah, I mean, it's just unfortunate that film didn't do better compared to some of the others, but once again, you just have to say it is what it is. So, like I said, no particular order, but moving on to the next. And for my choice, I'm going to have to go with the OG, the original. I got to go with part 3. I got to go with Richard Brooker. And he's the one that set the foundation for all of the others. And I love part 3, not because of the 3D aspect. I think the film would have been fine otherwise. So that really has nothing to do with it. But I just think part 3 is badass. It's classic Friday. It's everything that you want to see in a Friday the 13th film. You see Jason plenty of times. And obviously he gets the iconic hockey mask. And the OG walk, the badass walk out on the dock, just sets the tone for everything that we see later. Had a great cast, had a great shooting location. And Richard just did a phenomenal job. And he was pretty much an unknown at the time, but he stepped in some big shoes considering the popularity that part 1 and part 2 were gaining, which, granted, that was a very transitional film, you know, creating the basis of what we're going to see with Jason later, as far as a bigger, a stronger, a faster, more powerful version, however you want to describe it. But he literally set the tone for that. And I think that in itself, that's, he has to be included.
I love the simplicity of the part 3 look. It's not complicated. It's just, you know, the the Big Mac olive drab work shirt and the clean pants, the boots, and then that swift bald head and that sleek, clean hockey mask. It's just all so simple and effective. And that's probably my favorite thing about the Part 3 look is just how clean, how you know, streamlined everything is. And it's just intimidating, man. It's scary.
Absolutely. Simplicity, that's the easiest way to describe it. I mean, literally just as basic as it gets. Plain clothes, just a button-up shirt, a plain pair of pants, and the mask is pretty simple, but it's very effective. And they had to bulk up Richard a little bit. Not that he was really a small guy, but he just wasn't like a bulky guy. I mean, he was pretty in shape from his work as a trapeze artist and all of his work with that. I mean, his fitness level was there, but he didn't really have the size that they were trying to portray. So there's a couple times here and there throughout the film that you can tell that he's wearing a padded shirt or whatever, but I don't really have any issue with that. It's just a classic to me. That's just classic Friday. Everything that you see in there, the partying and just everything. It's classic Friday. It's not over the top. There's nothing crazy. It's just, you know, this guy, and he's taking care of business.
Not only do I not have an issue with the bulking up, but I think it's probably my favorite aspect of that version. And it really shows through in that. Is it Sideshow that just made the new statue that's like 2 foot tall?
They did, yes.
Yeah, you can really tell in that sculpt.
That was last year, but yeah, you're correct. That was Sideshow Collectibles on the premium format. I love
how they gave him that like kind of humpback kind of. It just made Jason look top heavy and strong. Like anything that he swings with that build is going to rip you in half, man. And it kind of made him Quasimodo-ish, but not incapable just enough. It deformed him just enough to make it seem odd, but also make it more intimidating. Yeah, man, that's probably my favorite part about Part 3 is the bulking up that you were talking about, specifically behind the head and on the humpback portion.
Yeah, the way that he kind of is slumped over a little bit, that definitely is a factor. And you don't really see that in any of the other films. But, of course, in Part 4, we're kind of limited on the time that we see Jason, more so towards the end, and obviously a different person portraying the character. But just we see Jason plenty in Part 3. So just to see, it's almost like it's effortless for him. He's just kind of, you know, moving with ease, and not that it's swift by any means, but we do see him running here and there. But you get the hillbilly vibe a little bit that you get from Part 2 once we see Jason at the end. And just that he's not perfect. He's not just this unstoppable killing force. I mean, he does take some blows. He does have to recover and make up for it. Whereas we see more, robotic or more unfazed versions later, which is totally okay because the character matures and the character changes over time, especially when we have 12 films up to this point. But 3, to me, was a more, believable character. Like, this is somebody that you could encounter, and it is fucking scary. I mean, look at the end when you see him up in the window, he's all bloodied up, and it's like, what the fuck? I mean, and then there he is again. So it's just a totality of things with 3. I mean, the 3D aspect, I really didn't care so much about. That really had nothing to do with the choice, but just the whole big picture of how you see Jason.
Two things. One, you didn't like the yo-yo coming down and almost hitting you in the face and then going back up. That wasn't a major part of your decision in picking Part 3.
No, fuck no. I mean, unless you're watching that on a big screen, I could give a shit less. The 3D aspect, that means dick to me. I could give a fuck less. And I understand that during that time period when it was shot, that was a big deal. But when you just watch it at home, you're like, oh, okay, you know, just get over these parts or whatever. At least for me, I don't really care. I would rather just watch it in a 2D version. I don't care about the whole 3D aspect, but I just love the film in general. And regardless if Jason would have been portrayed a little bit differently, even if we would have seen a sackhead Jason again or just whatever, I just like the way that they evolved and created the icon of what we know as Jason, not to throw any disrespect out there to part one or part two by any means, because that's building blocks of what led us to part three and what made it iconic. But I love everything that has to do with part three. And it was a great cast too. And just the whole situation. And like I said, Richard was basically an unknown actor at that point in time and just looking for work. So I don't know, really. I mean, yeah, could you put a different person behind the mask and get the same results? Yeah, but I'm totally okay with it. If I was the casting director and I could do it all over again, I would have picked Richard, no doubt.
You know, I wish that the only issue that I have with part three, and I kind of wish that I didn't know the backstory of part three just so that it wouldn't change my opinion of it, but I really wish that they would have stayed with the Stan Winston sculpt for the undermask, what Jason would have looked like underneath the hockey mask, because, man, I really love that original sculpt that they had intended on using before they switched it up with what eventually came on screen.
Yeah, I do too. I would be totally fine with that. I don't think that the alternate decision was a bad thing. I just would have preferred the Stan Winston version. I totally agree with that.
And, you know, another thing is part three is also the last time where we feel like we might actually be able to defend ourselves a little bit. Not to the point where you're going to come out on top, but at least maybe to the point where you can escape. And I think that in itself adds a little bit more fear to it. Is the hope that maybe you'll escape, because, you know, like you said, that is the human version, and debatably the last time we see human Jason, because I'm not really sure if with part four, what he is. It's never really been clear to me, because the fucking dude took an axe to the head and cracked his skull, obviously. So, you know, four is a gray area for me in terms of whether he's alive or not. But yeah, with part three, you still get the idea that this is a man. This is a living, breathing man that can be hurt, and he runs. And I don't think that takes away from it. I think that adds to it.
Definitely. With part four, I can understand that. But when you just look at it as being the looks are similar, the obvious human skin tones and things of that nature. So I get that, and I won't debate that with you, but I will agree that, yeah, I mean, Jason's not some hulking, nearly 7 foot tall person, you know, 6'3", 6'4", larger than average, but not some ginormous, just ass whooping machine. Somebody that you could reasonably have an encounter with and, yeah, probably not come out on top for the average person, but you could still find formidable opponents with somebody of that size. And I like to take that into a little bit of consideration, that I think that works for the character, because unlike the verses where they put him in Frankenstein boots and the lifts and everything, and it's like, Jesus, I mean, now we're getting into Rob Zombie's Michael Myers, where, I mean, how many fucking 7 foot tall people are there around like that? I mean, of course, that's a whole nother argument, but you got to look at what's more realistic. And I think in part three, it was just a perfect storm.
You were talking about verses. That is, I know we're not doing that with this episode, but that is without a doubt, by large and by far, my least favorite look for Jason. The platform boots that they had, they made no attempt whatsoever in hiding. The burlap jacket, I hated the hockey mask. I hated the head. I hated the sweatpants. He's wearing like 1993 sweatpants. Just, I did not like anything about that Jason. Nothing. There's not a redeeming quality in that entire portrayal of not portrayal, because I don't have a problem with Ken, but just the look itself, because I don't think any of that fell on Ken. It was all on that Ronnie Yu, who I could go on a hate speech about for 10 hours. But
Ronnie who?
Ronnie yeah. You?
Ronnie who? Yeah. More like that shit. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you. It's one of those things where it either works for you or it doesn't. And yeah, that's a whole nother topic of conversation. So with all that being said, where would you stand on your final choice?
My final choice is part four. And it's really for one reason, and that's because whenever I have a default in my brain, if I think of a generic, not generic, my default Jason that I go to in my brain, if I were to get in a car wreck tomorrow and get brain damage and could only remember glimpses and pieces of things, and somebody said Jason to me while I was laying in my hospital bed, the image that would pop into my head is part four Jason. And I don't know why that is. I can't explain why. It maybe is because that was one of the first ones that I seen when I was a kid, and maybe one of the ones that I watched a lot. But it's just my default setting for Jason. I love it. It has everything that I love about part three, with maybe the exception of the humpback. It's not as noticeable in part four, if at all. But it has everything, well, 90% of what I love about part three, with the addition of the axe mark on the hockey mask. And I'm picking part four just because it is my quintessential default image for what I see as Jason Voorhees whenever I think about him.
Gotcha. And it's funny that you mentioned that version, and I was very torn, and I'm always going to be torn over that version because I love part four. And even though Ted White was not a fan of the franchise of the three films prior and had never even seen one prior to taking the role, and obviously, as most people know, didn't want any association or credit once it came out, which granted back then times were different and it is what it is, but whatever, moving forward, I love Ted's portrayal, but the one thing that I dislike about four is the lack of Jason through the majority of the film. Yeah, we see him from time to time, but it's a quick, like the shower scene, a quick flash of the mask. Then, of course, we see his hand. And in the beginning, I mean, just you guys know what I'm talking about. It's just quick flashes here and there, where compared to three, and then look at some of the other films, there's just way more Jason in the film. And that's what people want to see, is Jason doing what he does. But when we do see the part four Jason, especially at the end when all hell breaks loose and we have one of the best end portions of Friday history going on with young Corey Feldman, that right there, that's totally fucking badass. I love it. Ted did an amazing job. And the only reason that Ted would not be or is not in my top three is simply because those last few minutes, as badass as they weren't enough to make my top three. Now, had Ted been in part three instead of Richard Brooker and got to see more of him and him in action, he probably would easily be in my top three. So hopefully you guys can make some sense of that.
So, you know, like I said, part four, and I understand what you're saying, you know, not wanting to see or wanting to see more of Jason, but they kind of did, you know, that was a thing that they carried on with in part five, is even though we know who the killer is, we don't really see them that often. But, you know, it goes back to being subjective, because I also love part five. And I guess that never was really a killer for me. I think that part four is my, maybe, if it's not my favorite, in my favorite movie as a whole in the entire franchise, it's in my top two easily, just because it's just bare bones, just everything you love about Friday the 13th, all wrapped in one neat little package. And you have little Corey Feldman, who, you know, we didn't know was a douchebag at the time, so we could still love him. And
oh, come on now.
It's It's just got everything that everybody loves about Friday the 13th and one nice little clean bundle. And then you got that epic, you know, death scene at the end where we get the unmasking and he catches the machete to the side of the head and that epic, you know, slide down that machete as the top of his dome is kind of wiggling around there. And it's just, it's everything about, I love about Friday the 13th. And it's most of what I love about Jason, the character, all in one film. And that has a lot to do with why it made my list.
And I definitely can understand that. Like I said, the only, I don't even want to call it an issue. The only thing that stopped it from making my list as far as just what we're talking about now is just that I just don't see enough for him to make the list. But what I do see, I mean, he would be on the list. I mean, he's honorable mention. We'll just put it that way, I guess. But I wish I seen more. But what you do see is definitely noteworthy. It's just not enough for me to put it on the top three. Now, he's going to be in the top, you know, four or five easy just because of that. But it would have been great to see what Ted could have done in Richard's place, not to discredit Richard by any means. But after seeing what we've seen at the end of four, I would definitely like to see what Ted could have done throughout all of three. So with that being said, and going to go ahead and put Jesse on the spot and see where you stand with the final choice.
This is probably an odd choice because he never technically wore the hockey mask, but Ari in part one, the look of Jason as a kid, I mean, that was an ongoing thing throughout the rest of the series, and that was like almost the most iconic version of it to me.
Yeah, with the discrepancies throughout the other films, I can see that. And, you know, Ari did a great job with that. I mean, as limited as it was, it's one of the, most of the time, if you look at any horror-related websites or news articles or whatever, as far as jump scares go, that's usually ranked right up there. So he's always going to be an icon as far as that goes. And if you look at that compared to the young boy versions that we see in some of the other films, oh yeah, he definitely is way ahead of the game on that. So yeah, I can understand that choice.
I think that for a lot of, you know, old school horror movie lovers, those people, the OGs that were there in the theaters and for the original Friday the 13th, that ending scene, that just few seconds of Ari coming up out of the water and grabbing Adrian is probably what they took away from that movie most of all. I think that's the image that is burned in their head. And I think that says a lot about, you know, Ari's look as Jason.
Absolutely. And he was obviously a teenager at that time. And it is definitely up there in the jump scare factor. And while we're on the topic of doing a Friday the 13th related episode during a Friday the 13th, actual Friday the 13th calendar weekend, I actually spoke with Ari on Wednesday evening. And as some of our listeners would know, that they've done another Blairstown and original camp location tour, and Ari did an appearance at the Blairstown Museum, and of course Adrian King's there, and they did the limited run of ticket sales with the lottery and all that shit. And from what I've seen, it looks like everybody had a great time. And I told Ari when I talked to him a few days ago, I'm like, hey, bring me back a souvenir from Blairstown or the camp or whatever. I don't give a shit what it is. You know, I'm a collector of all things Friday. Just bring me back something good. So I'm just anxious to see what he brings back for the collection. So I will have an answer for you guys, hopefully sometime this week, as far as that goes.
Is he a lot of fun to hang out with, like, you know, as a person? Because I've never really, you know, I've just met him in passing on several occasions, and he's always been friendly with me, but you guys are actually really close, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, we've traveled all over and did a lot of shows. Of course, I'm in costume most of the time, so while the band's playing, I can't hardly hear shit, just because you know how it is when you're in costume, your hearing is very limited. But yeah, we've done shows all over the place, and I'm trying to think. Well, Kent, you were at the Scarefest Friday reunion for 2016. I don't remember if you were at the launch party or not, but first Jason headlined the launch party. And of course I was on stage for that. There was a lot of good pictures taken and stuff, but yeah, he's great with the fans, whether it's at a first Jason show or whether it's at a convention, he is definitely great with the fans. Almost all the Friday alumni, are with the fans for that matter. They definitely appreciate it. And most of them will tell you Friday the 13th fans are the best.
You know, I don't have a, in terms of, you know, the people that portrayed Jason, I honest to God, and this isn't me saying this because it's being recorded. I haven't had a bad experience with anybody that has portrayed Jason. It's all been, they're all so humble, it seems. And well, except Kane Hodder isn't somebody I would call humble, but it's not in a in an assholey way. He's just, you know, an abrasive, loving, fun guy to be around. Just funny and jovial, and he'll bust your chops, but it's all in you know, from a good place. And they're just all so lovable and friendly. And even though, you know, I was talking even earlier whenever I was talking about Ken Kersinger and the versus Jason, even though I'm not a fan of that Jason. And I guess this is a good way to wrap it up is even though I'm not a big fan of that Jason, he was without a doubt one of the sweetest human beings I believe I've ever met. And so happy to be around fans of the franchise, and he was just as happy to be there as we all were. And, you know, you don't see that a lot sometimes. Sometimes the celebrities, they're just there for the money, and that's never been the case that I've ever felt with anybody that's ever played Jason. CJ Graham, man, you've met CJ Graham several times, and you know him pretty well. And another just down-to-earth, awesome guy that is happy, that is just as happy to be there as the fans are. And I had a really good experience with CJ that I'm not going to go into right now just for length purposes of this episode. But, you know, he did something for me that – that made a big impact on me and changed possibly, maybe I'm not even aware of it, but could have subconsciously changed my outlook on part six. Maybe, I don't know. I've always loved it, but I think it made me love it more just because of how amazing my experience was with getting to meet CJ and, you know, how he hooked me up. And I know you're the same way, Nathan, but they're just all great people, and I don't have a bad thing to say about Steve Dash at a Horror Hound in I believe it was Columbus, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. You know, I got to go behind the scenes with him while he was getting dressed to do the photo ops, and we hung out with him, and we just sat around there and kicked the shit with him, and he was telling us like behind the scenes stuff during part two and all the gossip. And you know, Steve Dash was a stand-up comedian before he was an actor, so he's a fucking funny guy, man, and he's so much fun to hang around. And that's just been the case with every single person that I've encountered that played Jason. And I know that you've had the same experiences, both Jesse and Nathan.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, all of them. Of course, you can catch somebody on an off time, or you can catch them in passing if they have to go to a panel or something like that. But I've been fortunate enough to spend time with people outside of the convention scene and not having to worry about any of that. And all of them, regardless, I mean, every one of them, they're all just grateful for Friday the 13th fans and everybody who's trying to help keep Jason alive. And whether it's t-shirt makers or artists, independent artists, people like yourself, Kent, who obviously are making hoods and things that are contributing to the cosplay. And they know about that, obviously, as you know. And if you want to share your CJ story, by all means. But I know CJ has some of your products in his personal collection. And obviously, Tom Morga has worn some of your products. And they know. I mean, they're aware of the community in general. And they're definitely appreciative of all of it.
Well, I'll try to make it quick. But in 2016, at the Scarefest Friday the 13th reunion, you were there, Nathan.
Yeah.
You know, I went around and got everybody's signatures, and I was saving CJ for last because I was so excited to meet him, because at the time he wasn't doing a lot of conventions. He hadn't retired yet. And I went up to his booth, and I was wearing a short sleeve shirt, and I have a Battlefield cross from my time in the Marine Corps tattooed on my forearm.
I was standing behind you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you were. I forgot about that. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I go to hand over the 8x10 that I was going to get him to sign, and he asked me about my tattoo on my arm. And we found a common ground there in the military, and we talked for a while. And I invited him over to my booth, not really expecting him to come over. And then later on that day, sure enough, CJ came over, and not only did he look at all my stuff, and not only did he come behind my booth and hang out with me one-on-one behind my booth, and we shot the shit and hung out, he traded me one of my Part 6 masks for a signed Friday the 13th machete that has a Friday the 13th emblem on it, and he signed it to Black Hat Studios, and he just traded me straight up. And the value of the machete that he traded me for what I gave him is substantially larger. So I definitely came out on the better end of that deal. And it was just an awesome experience, man. And then later on that night, after closing, and it was just, you know, the vendors and you were there and the celebrities, he came over and he hung out with us, and he was just genuinely happy. He was just as happy I felt, and maybe he wasn't, maybe he's just, he's an actor. Maybe he was, but it felt like he was just as happy to be talking to me as I was happy to be talking to him. And that meant a lot to me. It touched me, man. It had a big impact on me. And right there at that table, actually, whenever I handed him that 8x10, he saw my tattoo. He's like, I've got the same tattoo. And you remember, he turned around and made me pull up his shirt. So here I am holding up the shirt of the guy that played Jason. And he's a tower, man. He towers over me. And I'm, you know, taking the shirt off of the man that played Jason. But he has that huge tattoo down his back. And it was just, it meant a lot to me. And I think he's just such a nice guy that he didn't even realize, you know, how much of an impact he was having on me in that moment, because it's so just first nature to him.
Right. Yep. I remember that well. Yeah, definitely. And that's the type of guy he is. And yeah, I do remember that, because we actually have a picture of the three of us standing by your table. So I definitely remember that. And I mean, that's how most of the alum are. I mean, they just respect and they love the fans. And if it weren't for the fans, then we wouldn't be having this conversation right now, probably. And that's what's keeping the whole franchise alive, not to mention all the other the goodies out there and the shirts and all the merchandise and stuff. But yeah, if it wasn't for the fans, then nothing would stay alive. So yeah, absolutely. It's all a matter of opinion and however you see things fit, but that's our choices for the top three Jasons. So final thoughts, Jesse.
I mean, overall, there's a lot to choose from for a million different reasons. Maybe you like a mask better in one movie. Maybe you like the physical action better in another. Friday the 13th is just one of those series that there's a lot to love about it, and there's room for complaints for a lot of people. Overall, you know, I got to choose Kane. For me overall, he was just probably my favorite Jason.
Gotcha. And Kent, you're on the spot.
You know, I completely understand, with the exception of the part 9, and I don't discredit that at all. It's all subjective. If Jesse loves that, then that's fantastic. There's a lot of lovers of part 9, but I can completely understand, you know, why everybody chose their choices. And I can even understand part 9 with the exception of that tucked in shirt. I think we did a pretty good job of picking the top looks and characters in the series.
Definitely. It's all subjective, whether it's the person who portrayed the man behind the mask, whether it's the look, whether it's the film in general. There's no right or wrong answer. We didn't base this on looks in general or the person. It was just wherever it stands with you, that's totally fine. So that is our thoughts on the top three Jasons. And like I said, no right or wrong answer. So that wraps up another episode of Death Curse Radio. So please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at. And check us out on Facebook at Death Curse Radio or our website, deathcurseradio.com. This episode was brought to you by Friday the 13th. Until next time.
Evil lurks in the mind of a bad man.
This is friend.
And your suffering will be legendary even in hell. What the prime time, bitch?
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Candyman.
I
am Candyman.
because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
That is better.
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Some folks have a strange idea, Henry.